Blog Talk Radio.
Redemption Song, Bob Darby, used to be one of our hosts, and he likes Bob Marley. This is the Johnny Strozier Keeping It Real show here on Human Rights Demand. You know, power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has, and it never will. Those are words from a great freedom fighter of the 1800s, Mr. Frederick Douglass, and we believe that remains true today. Johnny Strozier, Keeping It Real, is a reentry show. It's hosted by a former inmate of 46 years in the Georgia prison system. Strozier advises young people on how to avoid incarceration, and he counsels former prisoners like himself, avenues to avoid recidivism. I give you now a tape from our January 9th recording at freeconferencecall.com. Enjoy it. Good evening, everyone. This is Mary Neal. This is an episode of Jenny Strozier Keeping It Real. Jenny Strozier, of course, is a former Georgia prisoner. He was paroled after 41 years in the Georgia prison system. His incarceration included time spent on death row, but his victim did not die, so that didn't happen. And years in solitary confinement, during which time he did try to commit suicide, but thank God he was unsuccessful. His friend, who he had decided to commit suicide with, however, was successful, and he died. They made nooses of shoelaces. Jenny Strozier has many interesting tales to give you regarding his 46 years in prison. And also, he talks to our reentering citizens about successful reentry opportunities, and he encourages our youth never to do anything to put themselves at risk for incarceration. I'm not sure if Jenny Strozier will join us tonight, but we do have another very interesting guest who I invited. And he has also been incarcerated, and he is also paroled now. And he can tell you what prison was like for him, and also give us pointers on how to avoid reincarceration and how you can avoid incarceration in the first place. I give you our guest for tonight. Would you please announce yourself, sir? Excuse me. Could you announce yourself? What is your name? Hello?
Are you referring to me?
Yes, I am referring to you. I'm sorry. I forgot your name.
Come on, man. My name is Glenn Maynard, and I served 25 and a half years in the prison system, and I went in at age 14.
What state were you incarcerated in, Glenn?
I was incarcerated in the state of Florida.
In the state of Florida. And, of course, Florida is one of the worst prison systems, as I understand it. I enjoyed listening to you last night. You joined us on the George Mallinckrodt interview, and we talked when George Mallinckrodt's book, Getting Away with Murder, was banned by the Florida Department of Justice. I'm sorry, the Florida Department of Justice. And that means that I believe none of the inmates are allowed to have or order that book. Could you tell me how you feel about that? Whether or not you feel that the reading material that inmates have access to in prisons and jails can negatively affect their attitude to the point that I think George Mallinckrodt said that some of the personnel at the Department of Corrections said that his book could cause riots. Could you tell me whether you feel that there is any possibility for inmates reading a book and that affecting their attitude to the point that they would resort to violence? Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. How do you think the reading material that inmates have access to, do you think that it matters?
Yes, reading material does matter to people in there because without it, I wouldn't have never learned how to read and write. I had to teach myself how to read and write when I got in there. To me, they were just squiggly lines on paper.
Take a few moments and tell us about your experiences, Glenn. We appreciate you.
Well, at age 14, I was arrested for killing a child molester who was a known child molester who went into what they call the hood and raped and pillaged and did his dirty deeds along with other prominent people in the society at the time in our neighborhoods. Well, this person spiked our drinks, which was sodas, and they know that for a fact with Quaaludes and hallucinogenics, and proceeded to strip us down, and he was raping my friend when I came to. I was able to find a knife, cut myself free, and attack. I didn't hesitate. And in the end, a man died. Well, they prosecuted me and was going to give me first-degree murder for defending myself and my friend. And they basically, according to the prosecutor, he said when it came into the aspects of insanity or mental deficiencies, it went into, well, he's from the other side of the tracks. Why are you even going here? And that's what the prosecutor actually said to the judge. We're getting some kind of feedback.
Yes, I'm sorry. We are getting a little feedback. Other caller, could I ask you to please mute your phone? Other caller, please mute your phone. And if you'd like to ask questions or make comments at the end of Glenn's presentation, then I will be glad to allow you time to do that on this show. Glenn is talking to us about, first of all, how he came to be incarcerated. He said that a friend was being raped, and he attacked the rapist. And indeed, the rapist did die as a result of Glenn's attack. And Glenn was prosecuted for that death, and he did serve 25 years in prison in Florida. Go right ahead, Glenn.
Right. Well, I was deemed to have an IQ at the time that the murder was committed, well, what they're calling a murder, a 64, which is well below the borderline on a mean score, if you know what that is. I'm obviously not that now. They recently, I think 2 years ago, said I was a 71 or something along those lines. They just have me barely above functional, which I can't comprehend myself. According to them, I'm a basket case. Well, if you know anything about discrediting people and discrediting their capabilities and their ability to speak for freedoms, the first thing they do is deteriorate your character. And they put you in a zone where they can control you. Well, that zone for me was Florida State Prison at age 14. And they basically said that because of where I came from and the way I grew up is the reason why they were throwing me in prison. And they had to make examples to the rest of society that people like the man who died has rights also. I didn't agree with that, didn't back then, still don't now. I guess that's why they were angry at me. I never received parole. I went through many self-help programs, was involved in so many different vocational trades. It's not funny. All of it was useless when I got out. The things that we're taught in there, straight off the top, if you're a kid, is learn to be a gladiator. You got to learn to sling steel. You got to learn to hurt people and kill people. You have to, or you're not going to survive. I went in there with a busload of, I think it was 38 children. And I say children because there was people under the age of 23 or 24. And I'm the only one left alive. Everybody else died in the system, either on their first trip back or their second or third or whatever, but they're all dead. And there was many, multiple busloads back then. It hasn't stopped yet. It's still growing. So basically, what I'm doing here today is enlightening people if they have any questions about what all goes on inside those walls. It's so far in depth in corruption. And when I say corruption, I can pinpoint that corruption. That corruption deals with dollars and cents, things that people go buy brand new, purchase brand new houses with. As long as there is a high violence level, they have higher paychecks. So don't think that the prison violence in there is just one-sided and it's coming just from prisoners. No, most of the prisoners just want to do their time and be left alone. But they're always experimenting with people in there. And the levels and the different things would take a lot more than this show's detail of that. Do you have any questions?
Yes, I have a question.
Yes.
Did I hear you correctly said that everybody who went in there with you is dead now?
Only you
remain alive out of all the children who went in there with you. Now, you were 14, but apparently they tried and sentenced you as an adult. Is that right?
That is correct. There was people in there. I was the youngest at the time, me and my friend. We were the youngest two kids in the prison system. We were both 14. And everybody else was like 16, 17, 19, you know, 21. What they would call in youthful offender camps right then was anybody under the age of 24. So you were in there with adults no matter what.
So you were in there, you were tried and sentenced as an adult, even though not only were you a child, but according to the professional opinion of psychiatrists, you were rated to have an intelligence level of only 64. And I think that people under 70 are categorized as being learning
mentally retarded.
Mentally retarded.
That is correct. And a lot of people don't realize that there are millions of what they call functioning mentally retarded people that don't even realize they have mental retardation. All that means is you learn in different ways and you're slower than the norm. And a rate of 100 is average. Anything that falls 70 and below means that you have a severe disability that has to be worked out in order for you to learn. Or you may have a deficiency to where you can't hold what you learn and have to relearn it on a regular basis.
So that describes you, because you told us that at age 14, you did not know how to read and write well, and you had to teach yourself literacy while you were incarcerated. Is that correct?
That is correct. That is correct. They had what they called school in the prison system, and that consists of what they call teachers. And I say they call it that, but it's basically somebody there to babysit X amount of people there, and you're not to disrupt their nap, whatever it is that they're going to do sitting over there by their desk. If you want to learn, it's up to you to go pick up those books and try to figure it out. They don't care one way or the other what you succeed at.
So did you receive your high school diploma while you were incarcerated?
Yes, I did. In fact, it didn't take me too long once I realized that words were nothing more than pictures. I didn't comprehend that, and so the picture of the W had to coincide with the sound. And once I realized that, I got my high school diploma about 17, 18.
Wonderful. We want to congratulate you on that. Now, you went on into vocational educational courses as well. Is that right?
That is correct. I was in several. I was in vocational printing for a while. I was in vocational out of body and repair. I was involved in printing, painting, landscaping, nursery operations. I was involved in a government program, which was like 3,000-hour course. Finished about 2,200 of that. And that involved in horticulture and floriculture.
Now, last night, you mentioned something interesting. You said they spend all of this money taking the inmates through various courses that are useless to them when they get out. Would you explain that statement?
Absolutely. Life skills that they're talking about is a prime example. That's one that was pushed on everybody. So you can understand the program itself. Somebody came up with this brainstorm that a thing called life skills could be introduced into the people that serve in time. for each person they get into class, that company gets so much money from the institution, the state or the federal government, by tuition or whatever. So they were more worried about getting the bodies in there and going through the paperwork than they were actually the people learning how to use those skills in everyday life, if that makes any sense. Prime example, they were trying to teach us how to fill out documentations to say that we need a job, we need this. Well, most people coming out of the prison system, you don't have any documentation. You got your state ID tag, that's it. And that's supposed to surpass as a ID until you can come up with the money for one. Well, not everybody walks out of here. If you had any more than, I think, $150 in your account in the last 30, 60 days, you don't come out of there with nothing. So if family is generous to you, you end up paying a penalty. But there's all kind of financial things that they do to hinder you from actually achieving out here. Now, not just that.
If your family was generous to you and kept money in your commissary and what have you, you say you suffered for that?
Absolutely. The way that the DOC, if you look into the Florida Department of Corrections rules and handbooks, if you have over a certain amount of money, the state's not obligated to give you the $100 that you need when you walk out of there. And they rob people every year, and that's all turned back into general revenue funds, which goes back into people's slush pockets. And there's millions, and I mean hundreds of millions of that from canteen alone. That's not counting all the kickbacks from phones and packages and everything. They have a monopoly on everything. All the way down to the chow hall food.
The Florida prison system, and indeed the prison system throughout the United States of America, is a huge money maker. Is that right? For prison investors and for investors in the companies that give services to prisons. Is that right?
Actually, I'm going to expand that thought. It doesn't stop there. Think about this. Two-thirds of the country right now work in some form of law enforcement. That's a better way to look at it. Everything from bailiffs to judges to prison guards to people patrolling the streets, whatever, however you look at it, all the way down to security. Two-thirds of this country in some form work for security, police, monitoring, you name it.
That is outrageous. So this is a country of prisoners and prison guards, when you look at it that way.
It's a debtor's prison society.
A debtor's prison society.
Yeah.
And that doesn't even count all of the people who are working for the system undercover. For instance, we had a little interference on the phone earlier, and I imagine that was not hackers. George Mellencroft is a prisoner's rights advocate who they censored outright when Florida Department of Corrections banned books. But I endure a lot of censorship that is not above board. It's sneaky, hidden, sly, subtle.
Realize is there is a lot of companies who are backing these other companies who are doing these wrongs. You got subsidiary. Take Pride Enterprises. A lot of people don't know what that is. Pride Enterprises is a prison industry. They pay prisoners anywhere between, I don't know, between 15 cents to 35, maybe 50 cents an hour. But they're producing millions and millions of dollars. I worked for Pride. I was considered their employee of the year prior to getting out. I'm in their little handbook that they have that they give other companies. But these all make other states' stuff, their doors, their walls, you name it. They produce all of this. Where's all the money going to in the end? If it's the state buying the stuff for the state, then where's the money from the state that's delegated to that going? Do you understand what I mean? This is supposed to be delegated to other businesses and corporations outside themselves for tax and balance. But if they're buying everything in-house at next to nothing in material or no material at all when it comes to labor, so most of your price is brought down. So the state, instead of spending, say, $6,000 on getting some new interior doors for an office building, they only end up spending $300 to get the interior doors, and the rest of the money just disappears. But it shows it was spent in budget.
Wow. That is truly interesting. Very interesting.
And it's owned and operated by the state. And, of course, they have private other companies, investors, and stuff like that involved in it. And everything from the governor sits on the board of directors.
The governor sits on the board of directors.
For real. And so does the secretary of the Florida Department of Corrections. And they get money for that, for being on the board.
My goodness.
It goes deeper than what you people realize. And that's the reason why I wanted to bring this about. And that's only one small facet of the corruption that's in there. There is big money in prisons. There's big money in prisoners.
There's big money in corruption.
Concept that all elected and appointed officials are
it's big money in corruption, period.
That's correct.
If they make money off of prisons.
Well, think about
judges,
this. Even the county jails are now switching over to what they're calling correctional officers. So if they're all uniting the county jails, that's the reason why they're forcing people to pay for staying in a county jail under charges they have, don't even know what they're there for. They're just raking in money, even in the county jails right now. You got to pay to use their uniform while you're there. You got to pay to be fed while you're there. I mean, they got so many bills that they pack up on you just for being arrested.
Hello, Ms. Mayor.
Well, hello there. This is Jenny Strozier. Jenny, I'm so glad you were able to come on the show. This is
I've been listening to my brother talk about the prison system, and everything he was saying about the Florida prison system is the same thing in the Georgia prison system. And what he was saying is true. You know, out of all the money that they make, he can't figure out where it's going in the Florida prison system. I'm trying to figure out where it's going in the Georgia prison system. You know, the prison system is a multi-million-dollar business, and they are enslaving people to do their dirty work. You know what I mean? I'm talking about when he was talking about the money that the prison system make, those in the prison system. So if you make the dough in a metal fab, metal refinish, and upholsters, and bottom car and fixing cars, and you got all these programs that you're supposed to have, and then the only thing a man can get when he complete a program is a certificate. You know, if he go in there and get a master, only thing he going to get is a certificate. You know what I'm saying? They don't get the credit and the money. You got all these programs. And then I was just up in the Georgia governor office this week to a guy that called the governor office, and I found that the governor is doing a lot of talking, but he ain't doing a lot of walking. You know, he's trying to put programs in back into the prison system to help people in the prison system, but you got crime is so high right now in the state of Georgia. You know, people committing crimes, it ain't the older people that committing crimes now. It's mostly younger people that committing crimes now, rapes and murders and drive-by shootings and all kind of crazy mess that's going on right now up in the state of Georgia.
Well, it's not there. It's everywhere because they're programming people. They're actually paying gangs and other people to be mischievous, man. I mean, there's money being made all the way around the circuit in this. And it's such so widespread that you can't believe the magnitude. It goes everything from the county jails to the officer on the beat to the people in the prisons, the ones who's making money off of them every way they can. Think about this. They bring all these drugs and they bust all these people inside the inner city. Then they turn around and take and sell the crap inside the prison systems. and have us to force us to sell it to each other and kill each other over this, that, and the other. That's the games they play. And they make money all the way around, everything from the streets to all the way to the prison cells.
Well, you know, you and I know that. And we're trying to convince the public to know that. You know what I'm saying? But then again, I come right back to this again. Out of the 46 years I stayed in prison, I was incarcerated for 46 years.
What year
and I've seen
start,
a lot of
don't
stuff.
Mind me asking. What year did you start, if you don't mind me asking?
I started in April 1968.
Wow.
I went in April 1968, and I came out July the 31st of 2013.
I was only about 8 months old then.
Yeah. And I seen a lot of stuff that went on in the Georgia prison system. You know, I'm just one of the ones that God seen fit to let out. But I should have been still in there and still. I probably should have been dead with the stuff I'd have seen. Their plan was to never let me out. You know what I mean? But
well, that's all of us. Anybody that did any more than 20 years, they don't want back out here. Because they trained us to be the way we have to function in there. And when they consider you an old-timer, and to give you an idea, people, anybody who served at least 8 years in prison are ready-born warriors. You can look at it any way you want. I don't care if they're homosexual, soft, however you want to put it, they're already born warriors. Am I lying, bro?
Mm-hmm. You right?
They're all warriors right now. I mean, from the female to the male, you don't matter because they're training them to be warriors. They're constantly beating them down, trying to beat them down. I mean, physically beating them down. They're even doing it chemically through medications and experimentations and crap.
You know, let me tell you something that I did. You know, I was in Georgia State Prison, Reedsville, for 28 years. When you said medication, you know, I had them come to me, you know, and they said, well, we got this medication that we trying to try out. I said, no, you ain't going to try it out on me. See, for years back in the early 70s and the 80s, you know, all the medication that they invented, they usually take it to the prison system first and try it out on inmates as guinea pigs.
Yes, sir.
That's why you find so many inmates who was mentally ill and mental health and then went crazy in the Georgia prison system. Then once they get you mentally ill and gone crazy where you can't think and your mind gone, then they can get money. So they get money off each man that go into the mental health facility. If you sign in, they put you in, they get money. You know what I'm saying? Then the whole thing is to keep you in now. Keep
That's
you
right.
on medication. Every time some new medication come out, they're going to give it to you, and they're going to drive you out on crazy. And then eventually, you're going to feel like you need that to function, or I got to have my pill. You know, in the Georgia prison system, you got half of the prison is on a pill. Go to sick call and take a pill.
Yeah, they got, and it's the same way in Florida, too. They have lines and lines and lines of medications that they pass out. Now, with what he was talking about with the experimental drugs, all the new stuff coming down the pike, the prisons are the ideal place, just like a hospital, except nobody cares about the prisoners. And
mm-hmm.
they put people on medications and these experimental medications and have them to sign this stuff and to say and they're okay with it. They don't know what they're signing. Most of them can't read.
That's right.
And then they end up killing these people. Their stomach's blowing up. I mean, all kind of crazy crap happened to people on these experimental drugs, and they just put it off as natural causes.
That's right. And you know, ain't nothing going to be said about it. Ain't no autopsy, nothing else going to be did.
Yeah. And they die on a regular basis. They were life-flighting people out of there back in the 70s and the 80s. Do you remember back in the, like, 87, 88 when they had the Cuban problem?
Yeah, I remember that.
Okay, you remember back when they were doing all that crazy crap and all the riots was happening all over in the institutions, both in Georgia and Florida, and I think somewhere out west.
Yeah, I remember that.
See, they don't like people like us who remembers those things and what they came in and just started shooting people. I mean, no people doing no wrong whatsoever and just started whacking people.
Mm-hmm.
And they said it was a riot. No riot never happened. But there was a big body count and all kind of crazy stuff going on.
Yeah. They got a thing now in the Georgia prison system. Well, now it's not in the 70s, in the 80s. Most of the gangs done took over in the Georgia prison system now. See, the gangs run and control the Georgia prison system. See, the officers is afraid of the gangs and the inmates in the gangs that control the drug line or the cell phone and whatever else coming through the prison. You follow what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. Not only that, Jeff. Yeah. Remember, a lot of those
there's a lot of people that's being killed right now that you don't even hear about in the state of Georgia. See, it's somebody probably got killed today, but we don't hear about it on the news. They don't talk about that.
No, they don't.
They want you knowing about that.
And a lot of the deaths that they target, they try to hide.
Oh, yeah.
They used to show it in the newspapers. They used to put it in the boards and stuff, but now they don't do none of that. In fact, the way you know that these people died and how many died is when they put it at their annual report.
Oh, yeah. And they call, you remember the jump on and the incident reports? You know, they don't file incident reports now. You know, I remember when the Georgia prison guards used to tote axe handles. You know what I'm saying? I remember when I used to see these guards with these axe handles. I remember being beat with these axe handles. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
After being beat and mistreated for so many years with axe handles, I retaliated. But let me get you to understand one thing. In the state of Georgia, the Georgia prison system worst nightmare. This is who I became.
And when they found out
that they couldn't control me, you know what they did?
Attack you.
And let me out.
I think the same way sometimes, man, because there's no way. You go back to, say, I went in 1982 when I was 14, and the riots and all the stuff that came in after that, the federal government ruled the whole Florida prison system was unconstitutionally fit for anybody to be in it, around it, or even work in it. And they put it in a thing called gridlock. Well, all the deaths, stuff that went on during that time, they just act like it went away. And then you have those people like us who was there during that time, just like you was when we were talking about the crisis with the Cuban affairs and all this stuff. They act like we forgot those people being shot and killed.
Mm-hmm.
It ain't going to be coming out in the dark. No, people like us, because we did fall through the cracks, has got to shine some light back in that darkness so people can stop this crazy crap.
Well, if you remember, after all that riot of stuff went on in the country when the Cuban was here, if you remember that they also had the Cubans in Atlanta Federal Penitentiary.
Yes.
And you know that they had a riot in Atlanta Federal Penitentiary where the Cubans got on top of the roof and they shot the Atlanta Federal Penitentiary on fire.
Yes.
But at this time, the president said he wanted all the Cubans put on a plane, and he wanted them sent back to Cuba.
Yep. And they caused
exactly what they did.
Statement, they created riots all over in the prison systems. Because other Spanish people also feared that they were going to do the same to them.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, they created that tension, and through the violence, they got higher pay rates for working in more hazardous conditions. I mean, you think about the money that they made just by escalating the violence. It's stupid.
But you got to realize that correctional is a multi-billion-dollar business. If you think about all the countries in the United States and the correction facility that operate in these countries, in these cities, in these states, it's the same ones that operate in Florida and in Georgia. Georgia got more prisons in the state of Georgia than any state in the United States.
I can believe that.
I'm looking in the next 10 to 15 years, Georgia might have a globe over it, and it might call it Georgia Prison.
The whole state
of Georgia might be prison.
Do y'all have a pride industry over there, a prison industry where y'all can work for a change here and there?
Yeah, they got an image over him, but you don't earn no money doing it.
No, I'm talking about where you can earn money doing it because it's considered a private industry.
No. See, the state of Georgia, the state of Georgia is 25 years behind time. They don't pay their inmates nothing. Their inmates go to work, and they work for free. That's modern-day slavery in the Georgia prison system.
They do that also, but they also opened it up to private industries. Okay.
No, they don't have no pay. Don't no inmate in the state of Georgia, private or state, earn a penny. I was telling Miss Mary this here. You can do 50 years in the Georgia prison system. When you get out, if you get some money, if your family send you $20, they gonna take 10, and they gonna put it in reserve. And then when you get out, they gonna give you $15, cause you gonna have $25. They gonna add 15 to your 10, but they gonna act like they gave you $25, but really in reality they only gave you $15. So you done did 50 years, but you get out to Georgia prison with $25. You can go to McDonald's and get you a Big Mac combo, and by the time you leave McDonald's, you broke. So there you is, $25 with a few pieces of penny in your pocket. You come out here in the state of Georgia, you can't get a job, you can't get a place to stay. I just got on the phone with a young man's sister tonight. The young man just got out of prison, but he lived in another state. He got out of prison, he got nowhere to go, got no place to live, but he got a job. That's all you got to have is a job. You can get you a room. So I went through the paper and finding some rooms and called his sister back and told his sister where she can call and get him a room to live in, because he got a job so he can pay for a room. But when you come out here in society, if you don't know nobody and you ain't got nobody to help you, then you lost. So that's where I come in at. See, in the state of Georgia, I got a program that I came up with while I was in prison. And my program is KCOP. It's called Keep Children Out of Prison. But at the same time, I'm doing research for reentries to help inmates reenter back in society, plus help them find jobs. I got an organization right now with Mr. Ricky Brown. Mr. Ricky Brown is an ex-inmate who did 13 years in the federal penitentiary. He came out and started his own business called the Next Step Staffing. His motto in the state of Georgia is, we don't want to rob, we just want a job. And we don't want to be on the block, we want to be on the clock. So Mr. Ricky Brown have about 6,000 inmates that he didn't hire. An inmate came out of prison, started his own business, got over 6,000 inmates working in his company right now in Atlanta, Georgia.
That's awesome.
So I'm hooking inmates up that's coming out of prison that need a job. I went to Mr. Brown just the other day for a job, and I got a job, but it was in Augusta, Georgia, and they were going to pay me $10 an hour. I was going to leave here on Wednesday. I was going to get down there and work, come back on Friday, and then I was going to be in Atlanta till Monday, and they were going to take me back on Monday, all expense paid, hotel, everything. But the Georgia State Board and Pardon and Parole said, no, I couldn't travel. You can't go nowhere. But they tell you they want your money. See, it's all about money. They want your money. But now if I had a job here right here in Atlanta, then they want my money. See what I'm saying? But I can't go nowhere else and work. So what they did is they told me, no, they even came by my house. But at the same time they were coming by my house, God had another plan in the ram. He had a ram in the bush. Because the same man that gave me the job called me again. He said, Mr. Scoach, I got a job for you. And I said, where it is? He said, you're going to be working at the King's Center in Atlanta. I was making $10 an hour. So I went to work yesterday and worked 14 hours straight. See what I'm saying?
Right.
So see what I'm saying is, But I said his motto was, I don't want to rob, I just want a job. And I don't want to be on the block, I want to get on the clock. See, because that's what it's about. It's about getting on the clock. The thing is, stop talking and start walking. See, you can be successful in society. You don't have to come out here and be institutionalized, worrying about the product of your environment, of being caught up with what's going on in the prison system. Because once you step out, it's time to step in. You follow what I'm saying? And once you get in, you stay in. See, because I've been out here for the past 3 years. I was listening to you when you was talking about you got your education in there. When I went to prison, I had an IQ of 62. I couldn't read or write. But while I was in there, I taught myself. You know what I'm talking about when you said teach yourself, because you know all about it.
Absolutely.
And I started teaching myself because when nobody else do it. And then in 2005, after all that hard work I did in the night, trying to read in the dark and do all the other stuff, I come out of prison almost blind. But I came out with a high school diploma. I went on the middle of Georgia Tech, graduated and came out master chef, master baker. Went on, came out here. Where the people thought I was going to fall and not be successful, I landed a job with CNN, Bangman's Cook. Went on to be a cook at Piccadilly, on down to Meals on Wheels, became head chef at Dogwood Senior Citizen Center, been working at Southern Buffet, been working at Citizen Lane, went on to Metro Management, and now here I am working at the King Center. You know, so what I'm trying to say to all the people out there and the people that coming out and the people that looking for a job, and the people that need somewhere to stay, people that need some food, oh, I got a place you can go get free food. I got a place you can go get free clothes. You know, so I'm researching for my brothers that's coming out of prison in the state of Georgia. And if they're coming out the state of Georgia, the state of Florida, coming over in the state of Georgia, you know what I mean? I'm doing what I got to do. You know what I mean? I'm directing my brothers in the right direction so they can move forward and have a successful and prosperous life instead of going through the revolving door back in the penitentiary, armed robbery, murder, rape, or whatever else. There's no reason for a man to rape a woman in the state of Georgia. Too many women out here, good women, looking for a good man.
Think about this. So many people, if they educated people with current jobs out here today, like all the training that they have in there, they taught me to be a master upholsterer while there. I got my education all the way through Pride Enterprises, okay? But watch this. It does mean nothing for the area I live in. There is no upholstery, basically, in the state of Alabama. I got out of the state of Florida. In the state of Florida, it's a trap, man. And there, they want you back in. They don't want you out. You're in life on the installment plan once you get in there. They do not like you getting away because every time that they get to build a new center or a new thing onto a new prison, a new work camp, any of that, that brings up their pay because the more officers that they hire, the more prisoners they look after, that's a higher paycheck. So they're definitely trying to get that overgrown as much as they can, bring their cousins in, their aunts, their uncles, their friends, whoever they can.
Well, you know that the prison system is designed for family members. You know in the prison system, the whole family works in there. The grandmama, all the way to the brother, the granddaddy, the great great granddaddy. He might be the captain. His uncle might be the warden.
It's
a family thing.
Yeah,
it's a family thing.
A lot of people don't realize too. It ain't just a one racial thing either. It's biracial in that, and they all making money. And they're all beating the hell out of you, everybody in there. And they're all doing everything they can to make even more. It don't just stop on a one cultural thing in there, because it's like once they become a us against them type mentality, it's all of them against whatever they want to do. And we just got to figure it out along the way if you're doing time and try to duck and get away from their craziness.
I always tell people this, you know, when you think that people on the inside is some dumbass people, people on the inside are some very smart, intelligent prisoners. People on the inside, if I see a man that can take a piece of wire and put a buckle belt on it, put some screen on it, stick it down in a bucket and fry some chicken, You tell me he ain't smart. If I tell a man, you know about the poppers, you know when a man takes some Y, put it on his pencil, and stick it in his socket and fire pop off it.
Yep, light cigarette.
Yeah. See, people in prison are very, very intelligent. They're very smart.
Very creative.
And very creative.
Now, if they found a way to take that creativity and allow them, like back in the 80s, they had this little programs where people could actually sell what they made in prison out into the parks. They cut that out because prisoners was making too much money, and they were making thousands and thousands of dollars because it was mastercraft type stuff. And they didn't want prisoners to have money because more lawsuits were being filed. People could afford to file them now. Now they made it laws to where if you get denied one time, the state can sue you.
Yeah.
Every day you were in prison and all kind of crazy crap to stop any kind of civil action against them.
Well, see, you know, the thing in prison was, you know, inmates used to be healthy because inmates had weight in prison. You know, when the prison system found out that the inmates were pumping iron and they was getting bigger than the officers and they was working out, they said, hold it. These goddamn inmates getting bigger than we are. Let's stop feeding them all this protein and giving them all this good food. So they started feeding inmates stuff like cow tongue and strawberry and chicken broth and everything that they don't use and they throw away, they take it and send it to a dog plant or some and turn it into a patty and bring it back fold in a box and say it's some hamburger patty, but really it's some strawberry dog food.
Yeah, and not only that, think about this. But if you look at the billing and the paperwork inside the kitchen, everything is like beef patties, steaks, and this and that. And would you look what's on the plate? It's totally different.
Look, I
could never understand why they always told the institution that they're fixing to have an inspection. You notice that they tell them like 6 months ahead of time, hey, we'll be there in November sometime, man, so y'all need to tighten up. And by the time the inspection comes around, it's us that all has to do the work. It's us that has to do all of this crap. And it's us that gets thrown in a hole and they act like stupid because they never keep it right anyway. And it's them that gets the paychecks in the end for fitting in with the Correctional Association Society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I actually got what they call a corrective consultation, which is just a little bit lower than a DR before they throw you in the hole, refusing to get up and look busy. They wanted me to get up and look busy because the inspectors are there. And I'm like, I'm not going to get up and look busy. Why the hell I want to look busy for? I finished my job. I'm going to sit here on my bed, and you're going to leave me alone.
All right.
And that's the way they behave. And then they'll get indignant with you, and then you got to end up fighting them off of you just for leaving you alone. For not making them look good. Why would I want to make them look good when they make our lives miserable?
That's right.
If you don't do it, you get thrown in the hole, you get the hell beat out of you, you get shock treatment. I mean, you name it, they coming at you.
Yeah, they got a thing in prison called emergency response team. You know, emergency response team is when you don't comply with their rules and their regulations, or if you don't bow down, they send an emergency response team at you. Well, the emergency response team going to call, and they're going to whoop your ass, they're going to beat you down. Then they're going to throw you in the hole. Then you're going to take some meals and good times or whatever. You know what I mean? And
hey, they call that the Goon Squad. Yeah, in the day they call that the Goon Squad. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they still exist. See, and a lot of people don't realize that these people are beating people down and killing them, man. They ain't just beating them down. They ain't just breaking bones. I mean, they're shattering their skulls, and they're hanging them with their own pants and claiming that they committed suicide. And if they're not killing them that way, they're putting them in showers and burning them to death. I mean, it is a torture society in there. And that ain't even got to deal with the inmates dealing with themselves yet. That's just the violent level coming from guards on inmates. That ain't even the inmates having to deal with each other.
Yeah, I feel you on that now.
And they make that happen, too. They'll give one group of people certain privileges they won't give another people, and you got to have certain things to function, and they create that friction to create this group to go off on that group. Meanwhile, they're over here taking stuff out the back door. Diversionary tactics. I think they call that minor disturbances back then.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that? They called them minor disturbances. Now a minor disturbance is a major riot to them.
Yeah.
But what I'd like to see people more interested in seeing these, asking these questions, because at one time the canteens, the prisons were totally fully operational. The officers started complaining because prisoners were too big. Man, they're too thick. We're scared of them. We're this and that. Well, hey, why did you take the job? Why
yeah.
should we be malnutritioned just because you want to work here? That ain't right. And that's exactly what they did, and they came out with this 2,000-calorie diet crap. Yeah, that's good for a child, not in a grown man out there slinging a sledgehammer all day.
Yeah. They do it in State of Georgia, 2,000-calorie diet. They don't give you nothing.
No, man, that's like a lunch, man, like small portions for a child when it comes to a grown man. And they're all starving to death in there, man. I mean, literally, those guys and girls are starving to death. And if they don't have any kind of canteen coming in from family or anything, they got to get it the only way they can.
That's right.
I mean, that's just keeping it real.
That's what it is. You're doing that. You're doing a good job in keeping it real. Because when I came on, I heard you and Miss Mary talking. And it seemed like Miss Mary don't got away there. She don't went somewhere else, ain't she?
No, she's still here.
Miss Mary?
Hello? I think
yes, I'm still here. I've been listening to you guys. You've been bringing out so much useful information that I'm not able to put in words from my own experience, and I think it is so important that people hear from individuals who have been through it, who came out of it. And you know, Johnny, before you let us know you were on air, your guest was talking tonight about two facts that I did not know. He said that something like, what percentage is it of people who work in crime and punishment, sir?
Well, in the justice system total, it's about 2/3. Take a look. Everything from the police department, security, everything involved to do with crime in general, or making the laws or creating the laws. 2/3 of our population, that only leaves 1/3 to arrest and in prison. I mean, come on, people,
wow.
Don't take much to do the math.
Yeah.
And secondly, your guest pointed out that, that you know, all of these courses that are forced upon inmates who are trying to prove themselves to be rehabilitated when they're behind bars, many of the courses are useless to them upon their release.
You know what I'm saying?
I'll give you a prime example. You take anger management. They tell me that, all right, anger management might work for somebody who's a short-timer, and I think your guest could agree with this. To take somebody who's got forever and in a day and put him and force him to go into a class he wants absolutely nothing to do with, and nothing's going to stop me from being angry but me. Okay? And to tell me that this course is going to help me throughout my life when I might not ever see another day in here tomorrow, what good is that course going to do me?
You know, let me tell you something. I just got through taking an anger management class, graduated last Tuesday out here in society. Now, let me explain something to my guests. When I came out of prison after doing 46 years, they told me I had to come out here and register as a sex offender. Right? Now, when I came out of prison, I don't know a damn thing about no sex offender. I ain't got no sex case. I ain't never raped nobody. I ain't never child molestation no kid. I ain't never did none of that. As I told you, I went to prison when I was 10 years old. So if I went to prison when I was 10 years old, what the hell do I know about a woman? I don't even know nothing about no woman. I went in when I was 10 years old. I didn't have intercourse with a woman until I was way in my 30s. So I came out of prison, and these people tell me, well, you got to go down to the and register as a sex offender. I'm saying, why? You know what I'm saying? So then I get down to the sex offender office, and the people don't even know who the fuck I am. I mean, who is you? You know what I'm saying? What you doing down here? So I get down there. And they tell me to go up to Better tomorrow to see Dr. I go up to see a doctor. Oh, I get up there. The doctor gave me a 800 question test to tell me, and all the questions dealing with sex. Have you ever did this? Have you ever smelled a little girl panties? So since I ain't never did it, I put no, no, no on all damn 800 questions. You follow what I'm saying? So I go talk to the doctor. The doctor tell me that he said, you know, after talking to you, I don't see nowhere in this policy that you need no sex class. So I'm not going to recommend no sex class. You know what I'm saying? He said, but you need some classes. So I go 2 years. I get a call from my PO telling me that I need to go up to Better tomorrow and take a sex class. Said Barobo said, I need a sex class. Who in the hell is the Barobo to tell me I need a sex class? Before I'm out here trying to struggle and find a damn job. So I get up there, and the doctor tell me, he recommended me to take anger management for 24 hours. I just completed 24 hours of anger management, paid my money to the state. I got to go pay $30 every time I go to this class. I paid my money to take a damn class that I don't need. I did it in the prison system. Now I'm out here doing it out here, and they still try to label me as somebody that I ain't even, I'm not even that person. So you know what I did? I went on and filed my own petition. I sat down on my ass, you know, like we do in the prison system. I went and got my law books. I opened them up, and I filed my own petition in the court that tried me. Well, I got a kidnapping case. I got a kidnapping case, not a goddamn sex case. So now I'm waiting. I got my docket number, and I'm waiting to go to court right now. But, you know, the state going to do their research, and when they get through doing their research and find out that I'm not the motherfucker that they're looking for, and then I'm going to pay me all my money back. You follow what I'm saying? But I'm out here in society struggling every day, doing from job, job, to job, to job, to make it, to keep from going back to prison. See, so what I'm saying is this right here, I don't understand exactly where you coming from because you ain't speaking nothing, and I mean nothing but truth. But I wanted to get that little bit off my chest.
Well, we're glad you did, Johnny. We're so happy to hear from you and from your guests as you discuss the corruption of America's prison investment system, the prison industrial complex, legalized slavery. And I want to point out to the audience that before the 13th Amendment was ratified, America had states and territories where slavery was illegal. But the 13th Amendment made prison slavery legal everywhere. And indeed, the initial job of police was to be slave catchers. And that has not changed today. Essentially, what's happening is that people are being captured and made slaves for the prison industrial system and the millionaires and billionaires who invest therein, including your judges, your prosecutors, your elected and appointed officials. So with that, that's my last word tonight. I'll leave it to you, Johnny, to wrap up.
Ma'am? What you say, Ms. Mary? Ms. Mary? Hello? Hello?
She said she was going to leave it to you to wrap it up.
Oh, okay. Well, I just want to say right now that usually what I do, since this is really is my show, and so what I usually do, my brother, is I usually wrap it up like this hymn. I usually say a prayer. So right now I'm just going to say a prayer, and then I'm going to let it go like that, okay?
Sounds good, man, and I appreciate talking to you, man, and keep on keeping it real. And what you're doing for people out there, bless you,
uh-huh.
man. Those bless
and
you.
And I hope you come. And you are invited anytime you want to call. Anytime you want to call in next week, you can come right on back.
All right, man. So y'all have
a what's your name, Mills?
Glenn Maynard.
Okay, my name is Johnny Glenn. So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna end right here. I'm just gonna say, a prayer, and we're gonna end it out. Heavenly Father, I want to thank you right now for the opportunity to come on tonight in 2016. Father, I want to thank you for another year to bring the message, to bring the truth to the people in society. Father, I just ask you right now that you bless my brother Glenn, keep him strong in his walk. Let him keep doing what he's doing. Let him keep bringing it forward, bring the truth out. Because you said that the truth will set you free. And I believe that tonight that Brother Green is going to set a whole lot of minds free on a whole lot of stuff. So I just ask you right now, Father, that you continue to watch over Miss Mary. Keep her strong. Keep her family strong. Keep inspiring her to let us come on and do what we do. You know, like I was telling her tonight, if I had 10 minutes, 5 minutes, 30 minutes, that'd be. I just want to ask that the Heavenly Father that you continue to watch over all children in the world, keep them safe. And keep them out of trouble. I ask you this in Jesus' name in heaven, I pray right now. Amen. And I want to say good night.
There's Glenn. Glenn. There's Glenn. Hello?